climate and for drinking water, but also because of climate change. If we can ban extraction in New York State, but unless we start to take on the pipelines, the power plants, the basic infrastructure that delivers oil and gas that creates carbon, we're going to be in deep trouble with climate change and lock ourselves into decades more fossil fuels.
Well, I want to thank you, Josh Fox, for being with us, director of Gasland, the documentary which first exposed the harms of the fracking industry, nominated for an Academy Award, also made Gasland 2, as well as this documentary, We Are Seneca Lake. That does it for our broadcast. We have a job opening for video production fellowships beginning July 1st. Go to democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Fell, Sarah Mate, Noonan Shake, Steve Martinez, Sam Alcock, Hani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Gester, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show here. And we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to springtime in Dearborn. It's springtime here at Henry Ford College, which means the campus is closed, at least for classes or the new normal administrative office functions. But they're cleaning up and fixing up the place like crazy. So all the maintenance people are out there and even cutting the wet grass and cleaning inside the building. So it's a fun time here. And of course, WHFR is still broadcasting as usual in the Student Center. Luckily, we have our own independent power and air conditioning supply. It's starting to get warmer outside again. So my name is Jay Koronek, by the way. I'm station advisor here at WHFR. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm joined in the studio by John Conroy, who's our WHFR news director, recently reappointed for spring and summer. Congratulations, John.
Well, thank you very much, Jay. And also, we have our IDs to let us in the buildings right now, too.
That's right. We're very special. Building's locked, so you can't just come by and stare at the windows at us in the Student Center because the building's locked. But, yeah, they are letting us in through the system. We have, we've been in this building since 2002, since it opened, so I think we've got a pretty good system here. Well, a lot of stories happening in the local news. You know, the new WHFR Journal, which is not the same as last week, just to make that point, today is May the 15th, 2015.
5-15-15.
Right. Too bad there's not a 15th month, and that would be all set.
Yeah. But, yeah.
The stories have to do with Dearborn and the surrounding area, and some opinions expressed by John or myself. We're the only ones in the studio today. Some opinions I have recorded that I'm going to play back for you and in the newspapers. All those opinions expressed are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford College. Nobody told us to. Definitely, we had to say that. But we thank the college for allowing us the journalistic freedom to try to be responsible and express a lot of points of view that aren't usually heard in commercial media. That's one reason we are a non-commercial medium. I'm going to begin with the show with the sad story about the passing of Dale Van Dorp. Dale was an instructor here at Henry Ford College in the speech area. And in the past, he was a theater manager of the Adrey Auditorium in our Fine Arts Center on our main campus. Of course, known as in the community as a great actor and director in many different production companies for the last 30, 40 years. And, of course, here at Henry Ford College, he did directing and acting, too, on many productions. As I said, as theater manager, he was in charge of the facilities for all the productions. I worked with him closely for 10 years, from 1988 to 1998, and I was the performing arts chairperson at that time, which was speech, theater, music, and also telecommunication, of course, my own area. What to say about Dale? Well, the story is very good that's in the Press and Guide from this last Wednesday. So I will share that with you. But it's hard to encompass all the productions and all the great moments that he gave us. As I said, I think I said, his nickname in the city was the Voice of Dearborn, because with the Dearborn Recreation Department, he was always the announcer, master of ceremonies at so many events. In the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center Auditorium, as well as at Dearborn Homecoming. And years ago at the, it was called the Adre Ice Arena. And he was the man. He was the person who was doing the announcing. And just a great talent and a really fine person. I'm a little bit choked up, so I'm just going to try to read the story here. Written by Jody Rampala at the Press and Guide. There was a deafening silence around town as word spread that the voice of Dearborn, Dale Van Dorp, died Sunday, this last Sunday, May 10th, after a long battle with cancer. He was 62. Well known throughout the theater community, Van Dorp was the man behind many of the city's activities, including Homecoming, the Page Awards, that's the Press and Guide Entertainment Awards, and even the planetarium shows at HFCC. Now HFC. Van Dorp was a charter member of the Dearborn Area Theater Association, as well as having been admitted into the Dearborn Theater Hall of Fame. And they mention, of course, a professor at Henry Ford College. He did teach theater, too, for a while, as well as speech. First serving as the Bicentennial Coordinator for Dearborn's Recreation and Parks Department in 1975-76, Van Dorp's role as an announcer for city events expanded when Dearborn Homecoming was established in 1979. Throughout his career, Van Dorp has announced parades, pageants, the 50th and 75th anniversaries of the city, and the annual Celebration on Ice. An Edsel Ford High School alumnus, Van Dorp earned a dual degree in speech and dramatic arts from Eastern Michigan University. After college, Van Dorp served as administrator in the cultural arts program at Henry Ford College. That was when I knew him, when I was the performing arts head. And he was there in the program longer, and in that position longer than I was the head of the area, by the way, for more than 20 years. And there's a sad story there, and that was his job as theater manager. It was a cost-cutting thing, but the college president at the time decided that they didn't need that position. I mean, you know, you don't need a theater manager who knows all the nuts and bolts and details and can organize scheduling and so on. You don't need that person, which is kind of crazy to anybody who knows a theater system anywhere in the world. But so he was out of work. The union that he was part of, which was an administrators union, Local 71, here at the college. Yes, even our petty administrators, if you will. Sorry, they're not petty. They're wonderful people. But, the big vice presidents and the president, they don't have a union. They just have all the power. Okay, they just, you know, they already have their salaries. In fact, the president here, remember he took a pay cut a couple of years ago when there was a big crisis. Well, the Board of Trustees gave it back. It gave him the money back. Although, interestingly, from what I've heard, the vice presidents didn't get their pay cuts back. So they need a union, so those vice presidents, you see.
Need
somebody to stand up for them. So Local 51 got a lawyer, and it's a very small local. It's only about 20 people. They all chipped in, and they got a lawyer, and they sued, and they won in court to get Dale Van Dorp back. But his position as theater manager was gone. But he was qualified, and he had been teaching classes here. So the way it had to work out from a court standpoint was we had to offer him a full-time job in teaching. Hmm. I mean, they'd taken away the job he was hired to do that he was doing, and, for no good reason, in my humble opinion. I mean, there was a reason, but I don't think it was a good reason, nonetheless. So he went back to full-time teaching in speech. And an excellent teacher. I, again, as the head of that area, I had to supervise him, and it didn't take much. His knowledge of theater skills and theater arts, how to talk and how to present to an audience, how to make a good eye contact, is made him an absolutely perfect theater instructor, since he was so good at the theater stuff anyway.
Right.
So we were very closely together. As the story goes on to say here, he was also the house manager at the Michael A. Guido Theater. That's in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. He also had to coordinate the ushers for all productions. You go to that aisle, you take that aisle. Okay. He was a great actor, a great citizen of Dearborn, and a close friend of mine. That was Greg Viscami, who is head of the Dearborn High School's theater program and president of DATA, Dearborn Area Theater Association. Dearborn resident Mary Beth Orovec was also saddened by the news of her friend's death. She said, "It's a sad day for Dearborn, but memories of this kind, gentle, funny, tolerant, reasonable, full of class gentleman, mentor to youth and adults alike, are nothing but good. Thanks for the memories, Dale," she said. And there's other tributes there. There's a little cute fact. When it came to that Guido Theater in the auditorium, he would always tell people that there were 1,201 seats in the auditorium, and the extra seat was for him. And so we have so many great memories, so many activities we worked with Dale on. I remember here at Henry Ford College, we had a great production of Jesus Christ Superstar. And we were, I know our telecom people were videotaping it just for in-class use and for the exercise of multiple cameras and that. And he didn't tell us, because some of us hadn't seen the production before. Oh, no, because we had seen the rehearsal. But in the actual production that we videotaped, they set off when supposedly Jesus died on the cross in Jesus Christ Superstar, they set off explosive charges, flashing light and sound from behind the backdrop of the stage. And it scared the heck out of us. He didn't tell us that there was going to be that. All the cameras and watching the videotape are jumping up and down, you know. But it worked out to great effect, because for the final, there's still a scene or two after that of the play and closing songs and so on. And the older style cameras, because of the super bright, intense light behind Jesus on the cross, It had burned into the camera lens this image, which appeared like a ghost-like image of Jesus Christ on the cross for the rest, you know, like he's in people's minds, He still lives and so on, for the last two scenes. So it was perfect. So that was a little, I think it was a practical joke that he didn't remind us about that explosion that was going to happen. And we saw him here or somewhere. He played in Dracula. Uh-huh. And, of course, he's did many one-man shows as Abraham Lincoln. That was one of his special favorites. And, you know, portraying that character. I think he did some performances at Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield Village, too. Mm-hmm. Almost everywhere. He was in everything. There's a picture in the paper, Press and Guide, for when he, in 1984, he was in Camelot as King Arthur. Okay. So he was a musical star, too. He could sing and dance and act and direct and manage a theater and so on. He was also, as a personal note, he was best man at my last wedding, which because I knew he would give a great speech, you know, because, I knew that. It says here a memorial for Van Dorp is being planned. FYI, I think it's true with a lot of people in theater, and it's just certainly true for me. We don't want memorials. We don't want funerals. No. We don't want a memorial, you know. You remember us. If we did anything good at all, that's great. If we help change any lives or make your lives better, even temporarily, a lot of entertainers feel this way, and I understand that. But I'm sure that the community has a great deal of grief, the theater community, the academic community in this area, about his passing. And so I'm sure there will be a get-together of some sort. It doesn't say who's planning it, but I bet the city of Dearborn will probably organize something. Just the word there is that he didn't want that, but of course, other people, if they want it and they need it, then I'm sure he wouldn't be against that. So just to say, I'm going to miss Dale Van Dorp tremendously. He was a great friend to me and a support in my early days in academic work. Even though he's younger than me, he knew a lot more about how to relate to people and get things done and how to organize things. He was a perfectionist, too, in terms of theater management and other things. I think some people, it's hard to say he rubbed them the wrong way, but a lot of people would come to him at the last second as theater manager and say, "Hey, let's do this." And he's, "Well, there's not enough time to do it. I mean, to light it and to get the mics right." And he didn't really want to be part of anything that was second rate. I mean, he worked like crazy to make everything happen, but sometimes it was just not possible. And people, some people that, you know, when you're working with a theater facility, just don't respect you when you tell them, we can't do this. It's too late. It's at the last minute. It's just not possible. And it's not that it had to be 100% perfect, but even to make it happen, you know, satisfactorily, it takes time. Mm-hmm. And he knew that. And but he was never coarse or nasty to anyone, never talked badly about anyone, never participated in gossip. Very, very sad day for Dearborn. I'm sure that we will hear more about that memorial, even though it wasn't something he directly wanted. You say, well, how can that happen? By the way, if you want to see something that I think is touching and sort of in the same mood, Robert Altman, who passed away a few years ago, a great American director, his last film was called A Prairie Home Companion. And it did star Garrison Keillor, but also a lot of Hollywood stars performing as if they were part of the Prairie Home Companion group. And they're still performing, in fact, in, is it Wisconsin or Minnesota they come from? And it's not heard in this area, and we can't get it on WHFR because of licensing issues. But it is, I think it's carried in UOM, Ann Arbor, perhaps, or EMU does carry it weekly. It's usually Saturdays at 6 p.m. There's a website and so on. My point is that the plot line, the story, was something that Altman created. It was about the last broadcast, radio broadcast. It's a radio entertainment program with live performance, sort of like Mountain Stage that we carry every Wednesday here on WHFR. But it's live performances, along with Garrison Keillor telling some funny stories, and it all comes from sort of a fictitious Wisconsin, I'm fairly sure, town called Lake Wobegon.
Lake Wobegon.
Yeah, that's the place. And he would tell stories about the different characters and different events, and a lot of crazy things go on, but the people are all wonderful, even though a little eccentric, to say the least. Well, in the movie version of Prairie Home Companion, all fictional, again, it is going to be the last radio performance of the show, and the actors, as the show is getting ready and during the performance, realize that there's another person behind the scenes and in the theater. And it's a woman, and they realize, big metaphor here, she's death. Hmm. And when they realize who they keep saying, who's going to die? Who's going to be the one? Hmm. And it's a sort of a mystery from the audience, too, and who's going to be the one that's going to die? And it's interesting that Robert Altman was seriously ill with cancer when he made this, and he had another director standing in the wings at all times in case he couldn't continue to even shoot the film, to make it through the film. So he was dying at the time. And at the end, someone does die on the performing cast, and he just performed on the show, and they run up to Keillor before he goes on the mic for one of the last sequences, said, shouldn't we say something to the audience about his death? He died in the green room, the waiting room, you know, his dressing room. Mm-hmm. And Keillor said in character again that, this is radio. Yeah. You know, if you're not here, you're not on the radio, and it's it. You know, it's this is all there is when you're doing it. And actors, I think, totally believe that because they're totally into their art. Mm-hmm. That is their life when they're on stage, on screen, on microphone, and they give their all. The great ones do, certainly. Dale was one of those great ones. And so I understand that how can you possibly sum up anyone's life or give adequate thanks in a short ceremony? And then, of course, the person who is deceased, they can't make a speech.
Right, they're not
at the end either. Well, thank you all for coming, and you know, and so you miss that chance to make your speech because you're dead, unfortunately. And no disrespect here, but trying to keep it a little bit humorous. I'm just saying that I totally understand, and it's a little bit weird to say no funeral, no memorial, but that was Dale's wish. Even though I think it's necessary, and I bet some people in Dearborn will organize such an event, and it'll be great. And I hope to attend that, certainly, even if it wasn't Dale's wish, because we miss him so much. So thank you for all of your performances, Dale. It's a tough act to follow, as they say. Mm-hmm. And John is allowing me to also backstep to last Sunday, the day that Dale Van Dorp died, May 10th. It was Mother's Day. And here on the show, for whatever reason, on these big holidays, I try to get some research and present to you what the original basis was for the holiday. It's usually not what you think, although some holidays are totally made up and were invented by advertising people in order to make more money for certain businesses, like Sweetest Day, totally made up, so they can sell more candy.
Hallmark Day, in other words.
Right. Yeah, Hallmark sells more cards, I'm sure, or email cards, e-cards, whatever. Well, Mother's Day began by a proclamation in 1870, way before Father's Day, by a feminist. Her name was Julia Ward Howe, okay, part of the group that was trying to get equal rights and even a vote for women, okay, in 1870. And she issued this proclamation, and it was, yes, it was the Mother's Day proclamation, May 10th. And here is what it says. It's not too long, but this is, and I think you'll be surprised when you hear what it's all about. Arise then, women of this day, arise, all women who have hearts, whether your baptism be of water or of tears, say firmly, we will not have questions answered by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands will not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We, the women of one country, will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of a devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first, as women, to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each bearing after its own time the sacred impress, not of Caesar, but of God. In the name of womanhood and humanity, I earnestly ask that a general congress of women, without limit of nationality, may be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient and the earliest period consistent with its objects, to promote the alliance of the different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, and the great and general interests of peace. So, it was an anti-war. It was a worldwide disarmament plea and a plea for peace, and actually a proposal for a United Nations with only women, because obviously the men haven't done such a great job in terms of either disarmament or resolving differences or stopping all warfare. And it can be done. Now, of course, if you listen to the show, you know my background is that of nonviolence and as a practicing pacifist. You know, I even hate to step on an ant or even cut my grass. I feel badly. But, you know, somebody has to do it, or Dearborn will give me a ticket. Comment, John?
Yes. Well, you're cutting worms, too, when you're cutting the grass.
Yes.
Well, you know,
I dig out the dead plant, and there I dug up a few worms, too. I try to put them back.
Well, Julia was also talking around the time of 1870, which was shortly after the Civil War. Mm-hmm. There were fewer men around. I mean, there were just more women around to do, possibly to do the bidding that she was talking about.
Yeah, a lot of men died in the Civil War.
Yeah, a lot of them were gone.
So. Yeah. And of course, you feel guilty about that, certainly after the Civil War. I mean, you went off to war and you left us with the kids and, you know, and then you come back maimed or you don't come back at all. I mean, I mean, there was a reason for this. I mean, there's reasons for the Civil War. You know, history classes list the five main reasons for the Civil War, also called Battle Between the States. But, it, you know, none of them are any good.
No.
If people die. You know, there's got to be a way to solve these problems. There are ways. One thing that can be taught and isn't is nonviolent resolution of issues. We had the police chief Ron Haddad. On the show last Friday. If you missed that, of course, you can go to the podcast anytime, whfr.fm, click on talk shows, click on WHFR Journal, and then select the date. That was the 10th. No, it was the 9th. Yes, May 9th. And he was talking about how they're trying to train the police in nonviolent enforcement of our laws. And non-prejudiced enforcement, too. What do you call it? Bias? Neutral.
Neutral bias, yeah.
Yeah, approaches. I think everybody should be taught that in schools all the time. You know, not how to make war, not why, how many wars were won and how great it was that a lot of people were killed. It's always taught in the history books that each war was great, and that's because the winners said it was. You know, the losers didn't think it was so hot.
Yeah.
You know, honest. And nonviolent resistance, which caused the British to lose the battle in all of India. Big country, by the way, folks. And, okay, it took 30 years. But, Gandhi organizing a nonviolent resistance against the British, and they won. They won the battle.
Yeah.
And part of the problem was it took them 30 years to train enough people. There's a lot of people in India. I think they have more people than we do in this country. I think 800 million or something in India, maybe over a billion now. And it took them a while to spread the word that nonviolent resistance, which is not just a simple concept, but it can be taught and can be learned. You can defeat any foe, okay? Any aggression can be defeated with nonviolent resistance. Somebody's going to get shot or beaten or put in jail. Yeah, but not everybody. And if you all resist at the same time, they can't stop you. They'll finally give up. As the big-time British Empire was beaten. You know, it's unbelievable. I mean, the empire of the world, if you will, for about 500 years, big army, big navy, any little country they would go into, supposedly, you know, not as civilized or as technologically based as England was, as Great Britain was, and they could take it over and exploit it, but not against nonviolent resistance. Impossible. And as they discovered. There are ways we could be taught in school to act and behave, and we wouldn't need violence anymore. And it should be tried. It really should. And Mother's Day, remember that. It was the original proclamation, the way it started, as a day of peace and the getting together of women to, yes, honor the dead first, but also make sure, come up with ways and work towards it never happening again. Mm-hmm. And it is possible. Okay, so I just wanted to get that clarification in there. We were busy with the big-time interviews last Friday and didn't get a chance to include that. Okay, let's go on to local news. John, you want to hit the headlines?
Well, it was the 8th, was last Friday.
Was it?
Yep. Today's the 15th.
15 minus 7. Yes, it's the 8th. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's why John is here, folks. Instant correction. Because we don't want to leave you with the wrong impression. Well,
no.
I was searching on the website for the 9th, and there is no... Okay, thank you, John.
Just a point, yep.
Okay, what else is happening, John?
Well, we have our big event tomorrow.
Absolutely, yeah.
Gospel Fest. Happening at our Henry Ford College Adre Auditorium.
Adre, yes.
Okay. Adre.
Mike Adre, personally. So.
Mike Adre, okay. Yep. And it's from 3 to 11, and then featuring many, many groups coming in. We're also going to have food available, and it's only a $5 charge for admission.
Right. And children 12 or under are free, so... it should be an all-family event. That's all different kinds of gospel music, very wide-ranging. We play it on our two gospel shows on Sundays. From R&B, hip-hop, gospel. Yes, there's some choir-type gospel, but all different kinds. And, in fact, a famous artist from Memphis is coming in. Well, she's just becoming famous, and she's going to do a big performance sometime in the afternoon, evening, too. I can tell you her name is Danny Rhodes. Danny Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S, and she's going to be part of the performance. So all those musical performances for actually 8 hours, if you can sit in the auditorium that long, and that was the auditorium, that is the auditorium that Dale Van Dorp was the theater manager for so many years. Anyway, and the food is going to be pretty good. We got two food trucks coming in for the event. One is Mexican food and ice cream truck, and the other one is going to have a variety of different barbecue food, fish, chicken, and something else.
Ribs.
There you go, of course, barbecue ribs. Thank you, John.
Yep.
And And those, I think, are going to be whole dinners, but you've got your choice of different types. And reasonable prices, of course, apply. And they serve beverages, too, from those trucks. And that's going to be outside. If there's still little sprinkles or showers, don't worry, because the whole event, and there's also some very interesting vendors here, too, people selling things related to the gospel music field. And the artists will be selling CDs, too, if they have them, if they bring them with them. You can buy, if you love the artist and you want to help support him, you can buy the CD there, maybe get an autograph or something. So we feature it. It's alternative gospel music like you won't hear pretty much on any other station in Detroit. All local artists, too. Danny is in Memphis these days, but Danny Rhodes, the female I mentioned, she's coming back from Memphis to perform, I think. And so it's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow. So come on by for an hour or two or three or four. You help support WHFR with the entry fee. Just $5 a person. Kids 12 or under are free. And there's food, and you can sort of hang out with the family for several hours.
Yes, and we'll also have our WHFR table with the mm-hmm. WHFR items for sale.
Right, our new 30th anniversary T-shirts. And if you prefer the old traditional style, we have those with us. And baseball caps and things. It's got to get warm sometime soon, and we think it's going to be a pretty nice day tomorrow. The rain, which was forecast to be so big tomorrow, actually came today, this morning.
Last night.
And so there's only going to be a little bit of rain tomorrow, they say. But remember, this Gospel Fest is in the Henry Ford College main campus Fine Arts Center. So it's not the Dearborn Auditorium down there in Michigan Avenue. It's up on Evergreen Road, south of Ford Road, the Henry Ford College main campus. Follow the signs to the Fine Arts Center at the west side of the campus. Free parking all around there, and come on in and have a great time. The WHFR Gospel Fest, first annual, because we know there's going to be a big success and it's going to come back.
Just another wave where we're making waves, and for 30 years, and we're just getting started.
Yeah, WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
Yes.
Just to get that clear. Okay. Now, the name Mike Adrey came up. By the way, Mike Adrey, besides donating money and helping us have a great theater on campus, which seats about 500 people, he donated to many causes in Dearborn, but he had a appliance store from 1948 to, well, I think somewhere in the year 2000. I forget when he passed away, but the store continued under manager George Bednar for a few more years with the Adrey family supporting it, and then they sold it. So there is no Adrey appliance in Dearborn now, but very significant supporter of WHFR since we began in 1985, and gave us significant underwriting and donation of electronic equipment, you know, CD players and that, in order to have something to play the music on here, and just a wonderful early supporter of us, as well as the college and so many other activities. Well, one of the things he did, or this family did, in honoring Mike Adrey, was to set up this golf scholarship. So it's a golf outing. It's going to happen again this year on May 20th, next Wednesday, starting early in the morning to in the afternoon. It's a little pricey. I can't remember the price, whether it's $75 or $125, but you get several rounds of golf and a fantastic dinner later in the afternoon for that. I think there's a luncheon.
You can play a round in the morning for one right. price, and also an afternoon for a little bit more.
Okay.
And then you pay an extra stipend if you want to play right. the, or if you want to have the dinner as well.
Right. I'm sure information about it, and you probably pay at the door, but you can go to hfcc.edu website, and I'm sure there's a big story there, and you can get more information from the website, too.
And there's another site as well. It's www.adreygolf.com.
Okay.
And a phone number to be reached is 313-845-9620.
9620. Mm-hmm. Okay, 845-9620 for Adrey Golf. AdreyGolf.com. And it's a great way, if you're into golf at all, even if you aren't, it's a great donation, tax deductible, most of it, I think, and you can come to the food part if you want. Our general manager, Susan McGraw, will be out there all day, and we'll be calling back and putting a lot of the golfers and the donators on the air here on WHFR. So you can follow the success of hole-in-ones. I think there's usually a contest where anybody makes a hole-in-one, maybe an extra little prize or something.
Closest and, to the pin.
And a lot of the campus administration are going to be out there, not necessarily golfing, but helping to organize and set up the event for the golfers. So if you know anyone that would like to come and support us, a business, individuals, adrigolf.com, 845-9602.
Nope, 9620.
9620. Okay, we got it.
Yep.
I should have written that down. So there's the name Mike Adrey several times, but Adrey Golf Scholarship outing next Wednesday, May 20th. Okay, moving on to other stories happening in the city here. Dearborn Heights State of the City Address, kind of late in the year for a State of the City Address, but as they do typically, they do it at a luncheon. And the story is in, let's see, the most recent Press and Guide. Is that on the top or the bottom here? Let's see. Yeah, top. Okay. Yeah, we have the papers right here. We try to get it right, folks, by actually reading them from the papers most of the time. And it's on page 2. There he is, Mayor Poletko. Well, by the way, it's a celebration of Michigan Week. So, Michigan Week. I'm not sure what that means, but it is Michigan Week, at least in Michigan. The luncheon is hosted by the City of Dearborn Heights major civic organizations, Goodfellas, Kiwanis, Lions, and Rotary. And tickets cost $25 at the door, and they include lunch and refreshments. And yes, you get to hear the speech, too. It begins at noon at the Stitt Post. That's 23850 Military Road in the Warren and Telegraph area of the city's north side. Again, don't try to drive down Warren from Dearborn, because they're redoing it between, I think, Outer Drive and Telegraph. So you're not going to get through there. But anyway, it's Stitt Post, S-T-I-T-T Post. If you want more information, Christy Kramars of the mayor's office at City Hall. They're only open Monday through Thursday, too, remember. 313-791-3490. We'll try to report on what he said as soon as we find out. Okay. Henry Ford Estate Horticulture events. John, do you have that?
Nope, I was going to show you the...
Okay, well, I got it.
Okay.
All right. Yes, horticulture. We're culturing horties. Or Horry's. No, it's a bad joke. No good. Not a good joke at all. Okay, here it is. Yes.
Horticultural events.
Yeah, plants. We're talking about plants, folks, and landscaping. So there's an annual plant sale, invasive species removal, and also landscape symposium. And these are slated for May and June at the Henry Ford Estate in Dearborn. And you know, I haven't found out, is the estate opened? Is the mansion open again?
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, that's good to know. I didn't see a story about that. I guess I missed that. Anyway, here are the events.
I'll read them to you, Jay.
Go ahead. You got it? Okay, okay.
Yeah, horticultural events. Annual plant sale and garden market, May 15th, today, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Well, that's already passed. No, it's still going on.
No, three.
Still have an hour.
Got a couple hours.
Hour and a half, yep. And May 16th, Saturday, 9 to 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. Then there's the next event is Henry Ford Estates Rouge Rescue Project. That's May the 30th. Looks like probably 9 a.m. to noon.
Yeah, it says 0 a.m. here, but yeah. But
I'll say 9.
Yeah, right. Just to be safe, that's May 30th. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it is. No, it is later down. I see it in the story there. It's 10 a.m. to noon. So.
Okay.
It looks like only 2 hours, but what it's going to be, you'll be removing specifically. You're not cleaning up the whole Rouge. That's impossible, but they have these Rouge rescues planned for different segments of the Rouge River all the way down. Okay, I know we have one here on Henry Ford campus that day that's promoted mainly to college and staff here, where we clean up part of the Rouge that runs past our west area parking lots.
Okay.
But what you're going to be doing over there at the Rouge Rescue Project at the Ford Estate is removing the garlic mustard plant, a biennial flowering invasive weed to Michigan. And volunteers must wear long pants and closed-toe shoes. Those mustard plants fight back, I bet. Maybe it's hot mustard plants. Ooh, that stings.
It might sting.
I don't know. But long pants and closed-toe shoes. Gloves and tools will be provided. So that must be a real challenge, because that's all they're doing. That's the main task for the Ford estate on May 30th. For just 2 hours, though. I guess they get a couple hundred people. They can get that nasty, invasive mustard plant. Oh, garlic mustard plant.
You just don't need to be a hot dog to clean up that day.
No. I wonder if we can take it home and boil it down and make some garlic mustard jelly out of it or something. I bet not. No. Anyway, join also the last one you mentioned is a landscape symposium, Topics of the Design Masters. That's going to be June 6th, a little ways away, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. So that's a big day. Take notes. And they will examine the importance of design in three historic landscapes, Clara and Henry Ford's Fairlane, Thomas Jefferson's Monticello, and Eleanor and Ethel Ford's estate in Grosse Pointe Shores. So one of those, of course, the Fairlane Mansion is right there. Take a look at the reality. But that goes all day long, and that looks like there's a $40 charge for that.
Right.
Yeah.
$45 for non-members.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. Right. Okay. So just had a caller. Can't take the call on the air. I don't know if the caller is listening, but... It was in regard to, it was someone that I had sent the story about to Dale Van Dorp to. Probably wanted to get back in touch there.
Sure.
Sorry about the buzzing. You always hear those phones buzzing everywhere, don't we?
They do.
Somebody keeps taking, some crazy people forget to turn off their phone before they get into a public situation. I don't understand them. I would never do that. Of course not. All right, coming up next on the new WHFR Journal. We're going to do that. We're going to take just a little break. It's always entertaining. I know there's a lot of frustration about fixing the roads, and I've got some things to say about that. But here's Jack Lessenberry's comment just this week, a couple days ago, thanks to Michigan Radio, and it's entitled, How Not to Fix the Roads.
If there's one thing that defines us as a people, it may be how much we love fantasy. That's why men in their 50s comb over that bald spot and go to singles bars, and why others still imagine they'll someday see the Detroit Lions in the Super Bowl. And still more deluded people expect rational, adult behavior out of the Michigan legislature. And no, I'm not even talking about the senator awaiting trial for felonious assault. During the campaign for the ballot proposal to fix the roads, there was a lot of perfectly proper anger over the lawmakers' cowardly failure to have addressed the problem. That made sense. What didn't was a fantasy that once we voted this down, that the legislature would automatically do the right thing. Well, yesterday we got what I expected. Speaker of the House Kevin Cotter unveiled his plan to fix the roads, and it's the worst and stupidest yet. According to Cotter, it would generate $1 billion a year to fix our roads, which is only about half of what's needed. But in fact, this is almost all fantasy money. Cotter, like too many of his colleagues, is opposed to raising any taxes, even though the state is facing a huge infrastructure emergency. So, where would he get that money? Well, the bulk of it would come from, are you ready for this, projected future growth in tax revenue. Yes, he's counting on automatic economic growth with no future slowdowns, prosperity that will send billions cascading in the state coffers. I don't know why he just didn't propose hauling that blueberry pie out of the sky and selling it. Suffice it to say that the staunchly Republican Detroit News called this an unreal fantasy. Cotter would dedicate a little real money to the roads by doing things that would hurt people and the economy. He would get some by finally killing the last of the film subsidy program, take money we promised the Chippewa Indian tribe, and continue the time-honored practice of raiding the tobacco settlement money, which was supposed to be used for health-oriented programs, something lawmakers have historically ignored. And, in a especially cruel twist, Cotter would wipe out the last of the earned income tax credit, which has done so much to help the working poor. The EITC had already been cut so that Governor Snyder could give business a huge tax cut during his first term. Proposal 1 would have fully restored it. Now, they want to completely kill it. This isn't a plan to fix the roads. It's an outrage. Now, we need to hope to see some sanity from the state Senate and hope it is catching. There were a few who thought that as unsatisfactory as Proposal 1 was, it was the best we were likely to do. So far, it looks as if they may have been right.
So it's pretty depressing about the roads. We voted no, and the city of Dearborn in this area, we're about 80% no too. So we weren't different than any other community in Michigan. 80% against. 1 in 5 said yes. The other 4 out of 5 said no. It was, according to an op-ed piece in Dearborn Press and Guide by Ann Gautreau, she said it should have been simpler wording, I think just to the point. And most people said we would have been in favor of funding it if it was just that, not confused with all these other things and made it very complicated to understand. Didn't happen that way. Most other states, I will tell you, around the country have raised their gas tax.
Yep.
Michigan hasn't raised a gas tax here in this state for, it seems like, 15, 20 years. And we haven't done anything about the big trucks tearing up our roads, either banning them or charging them extra fees. So there are things that can be done. And in the other states, guess what? The voters there said, yes, we'll pay more gas tax to fix the roads so we're not breaking our cars to bits. But Republicans are in the control. You got that? Republicans in the legislature. We can't pass any new laws because Republicans are in the majority. Half of them clearly are the Tea Party type Republican who don't want any taxes increased, no new taxes, and they don't even want taxes on any. I mean, they want taxes lowered, which means valued city services and state services will be decreased. If they get their way. And I don't know how that's possible, folks. One Republican had the first proposal this last Wednesday. It was reported in the Detroit News. And he said, oh, we can find the money from the current budget. Yeah, maybe. But he's basing it on increased growth of property taxes in Michigan. Well, that's no way to fund it. That's not, you know, that could go up or down. We know how it happened in 2008, right? And we still, don't forget, we owe $2 billion from the previous administration's borrowing against the highway fund. So we got to pay that back on top of it. So the best estimates now is that we need not $1.2 billion a year, but closer to $2 billion a year for the next 10 years to even catch up and repair our roads. So we then can begin a schedule of good maintenance. And so the Tea Party definitely won't do it. They're that part of the Republican Party, and the Republicans in general don't want to do that. This first proposal from this one Republican, the Detroit News itself, which is a Republican-oriented editorial group, they said he's crazy. It'll never work. So when are we going to get some legislators there? Who are you electing, folks? You electing who? I mean, in this area, we elected, a Democrat, George DeRaney, and another Democrat as a senator, Morrisfield III. And they're not for these things. They're for either gas taxes straightened forward, maybe some kickback for low-income people so that wouldn't hurt them quite so much. But they're in favor of these things, but they're not in the majority or even close to it. They can't get anything passed by themselves. So I'm talking to the converted, I guess. At least the majority of people in these communities have voted for the legislators that want to get these roads fixed by raising more money, by taxing the users in gas taxes. Okay, and the other states that have done it this way, they don't have trouble. It's not the voters that are against it. The voters in the other states say, yes, that's the way to take care of the roads. Raise the gas taxes. You know, I know there's a problem in the future as more cars get more miles per gallon and they get, you know, hybrids get more miles per gallon and electric cars get, well, they don't use gas, right? But they do use the roads. So as we move into the future, we have to find other ways than gas tax to fund the roads. It's so, so essential. And, write letters to the governor, I guess. If you write to George DeRaney or Morrisfield III, they're already converted, but they'd love to know from you that they've got your support, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and again, coming from the East Coast, we have the tolls that are on the highways in New York and Connecticut and Maine and Massachusetts, and those tolls will be raised, but there will also be an authority just voted in some of those states to determine how high those tolls will go. Mm-hmm. But those tolls are for everyone that travels the roads.
And I don't want to be Republican bashing here, but in the aftermath of the crash of the Amtrak train in the Philadelphia area, that's been in all the major news. And I don't remember how many deaths, 7 at least, but there's 200 people injured. It was approaching a corner and it sped up to more than 100 miles an hour. Boy, they got good tracks there, but around a corner, you can't hold the track very easily, and nobody knows why that happened. So the Democrats in Congress, not in the majority there either in Washington, D.C., are saying we need better regulations. We need more money going into Amtrak to provide whatever they need. It's a national service. And the Republicans, they're already saying, oh, no, we need to privatize it all. Mm-hmm. Well, there's no country in the world, folks, that has privatized their train system. In fact, we set up Amtrak 40 years ago, I think, because the private train companies, regional companies, were all going broke. So private business people weren't able to make it happen. And all the countries of the world that have great rail service, this is part of infrastructure just like roads, right? In fact, rail service, if it's really good, you don't hurt the roads as much.
No.
Because people take the train a lot more. Duh. And the Republicans in Congress are already saying, oh, privatize it. So they don't even remember that that doesn't work, and it's not working right anywhere in the world. I heard on public radio, I think it was WDET this morning, one fellow called in to a talk show and said, I lived in France for a while during college, and it was like the distance of Washington, D.C. to Boston, which takes like 4.5 hours on a train in the U.S., and I had to get on a train and visit a friend quickly in France. And it took an hour and 5 minutes because they got bullet trains. Look at these super fast. They've had them for years, decades. all around the world, they got great train systems because they're national companies. You need that for the consistency of maintenance, of regulations, of scheduling, of personnel.
Sheer volume,
I am not an all-out socialist or anything like that. I've tried to tell people before, they don't believe this. I believe that the correct answer can be from any different philosophy, any different political philosophy, and we need a mixture of whatever is going to work the best. And there are some things, and I'm with Jim Hightower on this, we don't have a commentary from him today, the U.S. Postal Service should be maintained and supported, and they're trying to break it up and kill it. And that's the wrong thing to do there. There are a few things that the federal government does really well, like war, unfortunately. and that could be, why don't we just privatize that? Well, guess what? Roman Empire privatized war. It didn't work out so well for them.
Nope.
As long as you're going to have war, you don't want a private mercenary army out there that all of a sudden decides, wait a minute, we could get killed doing this and they're not paying us enough. So we're just going to go to another country and get hired by them. You don't want a mercenary army, of course, but the government does war real well, not to its credit, and several other things. And one of the things it does real well is the interstate highway system, which is falling into disrepair too, John. Not as bad as our Michigan roads, but it needs more support. And, of course, our train system, the Amtrak system too. And who's best set up to do it? If anybody puts the money into infrastructure, yes, the Republicans. And by the way, where can that money come from? Well, as a pacifist, it can come from that 40% of the budget that only goes to war with external countries. 40% of our budget goes for war. Imagine how many roads, how many train systems, how many health care insurees we could take on. Imagine the improvements in so many things. Not everything. I'm not saying the federal government should do it all. Absolutely not. But on certain topics, the federal government should be doing it. Should it be fixing Michigan roads? Well, I think that has to be. I mean, here in Dearborn, they know which roads need to be fixed. They got all the information. They've been, keeping track of the bad roads from year to year. And when they get the money trickling down, then they hire somebody else, usually the county, to come in. And they pay Wayne County to fix the roads in Dearborn because Wayne County's got the trucks and the people. But it gets done. I'm not saying the federal government should be taking over all the road repairs, but nonetheless, we got to have the funds generated to these appropriate governmental areas. And a flip-flop on that is something was in my head, maybe not to point to John and let him take over here where I remember this, about infrastructure. Go on, John.
Well, I wanted to say, I know of your pacifism, Jay, but it is also Armed Forces Day, Saturday, yeah. May 16th, and it is also the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War ending. Please,
I can celebrate one of those.
Okay. But please say thanks to any veterans you know.
Absolutely.
That you come across. These are the folks that have survived, and there's so many that haven't that we need to be thankful for.
Yeah, even on Memorial Day, of course, where we respect the dead and or the dying in our armed forces. I feel sorry for them because I don't think it was necessary, but they did it with all good intentions and for the spirit of supporting our country and all the citizens of this country, and and terrible things happen, as could be expected in a war. But yes. We do need to honor the people who have signed up and who are serving and who are dying, unfortunately.
And we certainly wouldn't be where we are except for their incredible work and dedication.
We need to give them a little better health care, too, when they come back, if they come
back.
That
would help.
Yeah. Okay. Right. The Dearborn Symphony Orchestra, great, great story in the Times Herald of this week. And let me grab my copy of it here.
Okay.
And it goes a little bit in depth. We only have about 6 minutes left to the hour of the new WHFR Journal. Highway 61 with Joanne Kruczynska comes up today. I'm sure she'll be talking about and playing music from Buddy B.B. King, who passed away yesterday. Oh. It's on all the major news networks. He was certainly one of the big ones in the blues area. Okay. Dearborn Symphony hopes to broaden its audience base. One of the problems of many nonprofit organizations and music organizations that don't get out into popular culture is how to keep going. The Dearborn Symphony does live music, and on here at WHFR, we always say, you love the music we're playing, get out and support live music performances, because that's the other part of it. And that's a great experience. It's different from and usually better than listening to CDs or downloaded MP3s, and really. And it's a social thing. Other people are around. Wow, how cool is that? And you can all enjoy it together. We have a beautiful facility in Dearborn at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, and a great symphony, known and respected pretty far and wide. And what's interesting in the story, and you can read it, it was written by Sue Suchita, and it's on page 3A of this week's Dearborn Times Herald. Really great background of what they're trying to do to keep going. Did you know, for example, folks, that it costs between $25,000 to $30,000 to produce just one regular season symphony concert? That includes salaries for the musicians, director, personnel manager, and music librarian, and also music licensing fees. I wonder if they have to pay the city for using the auditorium, too. I think so.
I think they would.
City
yeah.
usually always wants a cut somehow. And so what is that? Well, the auditorium seats 1,200 people, but if they get 1,000 people, then everybody still have to pay $25 a person. Okay? Now, it's a lot cheaper if you buy a series ticket, and since it is a nonprofit, there's various ways you can take credit on your federal taxes if you do it that way. But there's a slight discount if you buy a series ticket. Now, the season has ended now for this year, but the 2015-2016 season is already being talked about. You can go to dearbornsymphony.org for information on that. And you know, so they need support, and it's... It's really a great sort of experience, and you have to be part of it to enjoy it. We always have our WHFR information table there. We always do whatever we can to support classical music. So why don't you play some Dearborn Symphony on WHFR? Mm-hmm. Now, that's not the idea, folks. We play classical music, and hopefully it'll get you to listen to it at the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra in person. There are licensing issues. We can't, first of all. So, okay, we can't use those live performances, even if they recorded them. Besides, that would take away the money. If people get here on WHFR for free, then they're losing money on the whole proposition if you don't pay for the ticket to go to the auditorium. So I hope you appreciate that. They're trying to make all that money, and they do have a lot of special nonprofits. I'm waiting for the city tours that usually happen every year when the weather gets good, a tour of a certain neighborhood in the city of Dearborn that people open their houses, and you can go and be nosy and see how they decorate it and look at their gardens and so on. It's not quite garden weather or walk-around weather yet, but I think that might be coming up. So we always tries to tell you about fundraising activities that are happening around town for the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra. Symphony Organization President Sandy Butler worked with her many times on many different issues. So read that article in depth and try to appreciate the Dearborn Symphony next time either they come around raising money or the next time their season begins. We hope to be there with you and supporting them in the fall. By the way, I did get a note from one of our producers of the Impact Show from a couple weeks ago. We have Impact on the 2nd and 4th Tuesdays from 1 to 2 o'clock. If you also go to WHFR talk shows and you go to Tuesday Forum instead of WHFR Journal, look up the second Tuesday of this month, and the Impact Show there has information about the cleanup activities, I understand, from, I think it's the most current show anyway, and even though the show basically was about the Mutstrut, I think there was some information there too about the cleanup activities around Dearborn, the Rouge River cleanup activity.
Rouge River cleanup, yep.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. City of Dearborn, really quick, they still are having a budget hearing coming up. There's still one left. It's Tuesday, June 2nd, so about a week and a half away at 6:30. Public hearing on the whole budget, a whole biggie budget there. Public is invited to ask questions and comment on the proposed budget, which outlines city expenditures and revenues. The budget will be adopted, probably without any changes, but you got a chance to speak out and ask questions, and that budget is going to be adopted on Thursday, June 11th. So that's the time. So put it on your schedule. Tuesday, June 2nd, 6:30 p.m. at, of course, the Dearborn Administrative Center in the Council Chambers in that building.
And the May 18th is a budget hearing right there on the front, the way I got it circled.
Yeah, this coming Monday.
Yep.
There's an outstanding budget report payment. There's some individual reports on different issues having to do with the budget.
So type things.
Yeah, if you want in-depth information about part of the budget, this Monday, I think at the same time, 6:30, same place, Chamber of Council Chambers, outstanding debt report, pavement management system rating, street funding, and capital improvement plan. So Thursday, May 28th, by the way, is parking.
Yes.
Which I thought they resolved by just going ahead with free parking, which is going to cost the city a little longer to pay off those towers over there. But I think that's a very popular idea. I'm glad that happened. Okay, let's see what else is happening here in the last couple moments. It's WHFR Dearborn you're listening to. Our podcast will be cutting off in a moment or two, but we're going to continue a couple stories as Highway 61 gets started. Yep. Dearborn and Wayne County have approved new business districts. These are downtown development money, which comes from government sources. I forget if it's the state government or federal government, and it does help activities and like the Cinco de Mayo happening in West Dearborn. Some of the money for that event came from a development grant that comes from these business districts that are formed. And I know that I noticed that one of them is actually in East Dearborn on Warren Avenue. Yeah, they've got a great business district there, but it never was officially organized and developed with these extra grants, so that's nice. Art Space in Dearborn got $10,000, not much, but still a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts.